given what's taking place in the technology evolution that we're seeing, is you can come up with a change management plan on how you're going to develop something, and then you're going to implement it, and then you're going to measure it. And it means nothing if you don't have an organization that's ready for change.
Hello, and welcome to the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Dull. And on this show, we interview today's industry leaders in talent acquisition to discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds. If you are working in talent acquisition and have always wanted to sit down with your peers at other companies to exchange ideas and learn, well, this show is the next best thing. Join us each week as we bring you a new expert interview and extract their expertise. This episode is brought to you by SageMark HR. Transform your recruiting practices with leading-edge technology. Selecting the right recruiting solutions to enable your strategy is one of the biggest challenges leaders face today. You know technology will help, but searching all the options to find out what will work best for your specific needs can be both overwhelming and time-consuming. At SageMark HR, we make selecting the right recruiting technology easy. Our proven process has helped companies such as 3M, Comcast, Stryker, Walgreens, and many more. Reach out to us at SageMark HR for a free consultation to learn how we can help you improve results with less stress and confidently change from reacting to leading.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Dull, and today I have a conversation with Mike Aronson. Mike is the Global TA Operations Leader for Johnson Controls. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Really, really excited to be here.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed our previous conversations, and I'm sure this will be another fun one. Let's start out like we always do, if you wouldn't mind giving a little bit of background for the audience, get into a little like how you got into the talent space and a little bit around your background of, around the positions that you've held leading up to your current role.
Absolutely. So I went to school for sports marketing and communications, and I had high aspirations and dreams of working for a professional sports team. And lo and behold, when I graduated, I actually did get hired by a professional sports team. And after, I would say, about a month, I realized that it was not what I had anticipated it to be. So I knew somebody that happened to work at a staffing firm. I had never heard of anything related to staffing or recruiting. She said, you should come talk to us. I didn't know if I was going to talk to them about a job that they would potentially place me at or that I'd be working internally for them. So I ended up getting hired by a third-party staffing firm. Really great experience, laid some specific foundational just ethic and ability and how to work. And I spent about 4 years there. And I mean, it's agency. It was tough. It was a grind. At that point in my career, I was still young and early and looking to tackle the world. And I liked recruiting, but I just was an average salesperson. I didn't do great there. And I leveraged my contacts from the firm that I worked for to get an opportunity working with ADT. And ADT Commercial, which is actually part of the company that I currently work for now, Johnson Controls. At the time, it was separate. It was part of Tyco. Tyco merged with Johnson Controls back in 2016. And they were just experimenting, trying to figure out if they wanted to bring in recruiting in-house. It was all done through third party at that time. They really had no centralized process or governance around it. And so I was one of the first five contract recruiters to really pilot that work. And very little organization, very little strategy. I feel like day one was, here's a book of job descriptions. Here's a list of contacts to see if they have openings. Felt very much like an agency, to be honest with you, with obviously the backing of only recruiting on specific roles at ADT. And ultimately, that organically led to just more process, more governance. I was moved into a lead role where I had a handful of recruiters that reported into me at the time, which organically just kept growing. Eventually, it was a manager, and I had a larger team of recruiters, moved into a director role, which ultimately was multiple managers with teams of recruiters, all supporting hiring within North America. And so at its peak, we were doing around 7,500 to 8,000 hires just in my business unit. And I was in that role for probably, I would say, 6 or 7 years. and an operations role became available on the TA team. And so what interested me in that was we were pretty successful. We scaled. We were able to deliver on a number of high priority initiatives. But and I think what I realized at that time is I really enjoyed the build. And I felt like from an operations standpoint, we were a little behind the curve with where we were, both from a technology standpoint, maybe some processes. We didn't have a ton of really valuable data that helped drive decisions and effectiveness. And so I raised my hand for the operations role. I asked for some additional responsibilities on top of just vendors, tools, and technology. And it was employer brand. We didn't really have an identity from an employer standpoint. And I moved into this global operations role about 3.5 years ago. And in the time that I've spent in this role, I'm not taking credit for it. We've got a great team. We've got some very collaborative leaders that really put our heads together and we tried to push the function forward. And ultimately, we've overhauled pretty much every single tool that we had when I stepped into the role. We launched Workday Recruit. We had a CRM, which was Avature, which we moved away from that. We brought in some CRM-like functionalities. We revamped our career site. We use AI, generative AI, but also automation infused into the process with Paradox, some candidate experience measures in the ecosystem. And then lastly, leveraging programmatic job distribution and more broadly social media campaigns and just reaching candidates in different ways than we were. And so now we're at a point where, look, I don't think that we're ever in a stabilization period in our industry at this time, because new tools, new resources are always becoming clear into the push forward. But we are definitely in a place where we have enough details, we have enough data to make decisions that ultimately we weren't making before. And that's what really enticed me into an operations role, is I wanted to be able to make an impact, not just in the region that I was supporting, but how could we take it and expand it, scale it globally. Johnson Controls is 100,000 employees. We do about 25,000 in hires a year. We're in over 150 different countries. And so it was really fascinating to me to learn all of the global dynamics, where recruiting is not just recruiting. It's different in different parts of the world, cultures. What's normal in one region might be completely different in another region, and we might think is absurd. And so just those complexities that you just don't get from a more of a regional look. When I was in North America, I just didn't have an appreciation for what was going on in EMEA or APAC or in our Latin America businesses. So it was enticing to me. And ultimately, that's how I evolved very quickly. I've been with Johnson Controls, Tyco together as both companies for about 16 years. And it's been quite a journey to see it from 5 contract recruiters to a function of close to 200 people supporting. And even at that time when I started with ADT back then, we only had a slice of the business. It was like, let's try it here. And to be able to expand it, where we have probably close to 90% of the hiring across the globe, has been quite a journey to be on.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for going into that level of detail on your background and those types of things. Let's double click a little bit on your responsibility. So you talked a little bit about the scope and size of Johnson Controls with 100,000 employees and 25,000 global hires and 150 different countries. So that's a pretty significant amount of scale to try to manage. Talk maybe specifically about your role in operations. And so how would you describe your role as a TA operations leader and how that fits into the broader TA function? How is your team constructed? What kind of resources are you on your team?
So we have it's actually 3 regions now, recently just reorganized. It was 4, but essentially we have regional directors in every one of our regions. And in some region, North America, which we do about 50% of our hiring, we have more than one. So it was 2 regional directors. And they have the teams of recruiters that ultimately drive hiring. And so my team is really a support structure, a COE within our COE, so to speak. And our job is really to provide not only the tools and resources that the regional teams need, but also help inform and educate on not only why we've made the decision to either leverage this tool or change this process, but also measure the effectiveness and be able to give them the information that they need to have the right conversations in their regions. We have a pretty sizable data set between all of the different partnerships that we have with technology, but we also have directly coming out of Workday Recruit. We have a daily dashboard that is updated with so many different metrics that we look at. And I look at it for my own purposes, but everybody has access to it and they can use that to their advantage in the regions to help inform a sourcing strategy based on what's been done historically or an area where we may be getting stuck on, you know, interviews or not getting enough candidates. There's enough in there that can advise, that we should be using to advise the business on how to do what we're trying to accomplish for them effectively and efficiently. And that's really what the operations team here at Johnson Controls is tasked with, is how do we create efficiencies? How do we create effectiveness? And then how do we know? And I would say that in these last 3 years, from a build standpoint, with all of the new technology that's not only been infused into our market, but also specifically what we've taken on, we're constantly trying to change the narrative of what talent acquisition is here at Johnson Controls to be more of a consultant, more an advisor versus transactional. And we're pretty passionate about the tools that we're using that they're going to enable us to get there as all of these emerging technologies take hold and really we get strong utilization from. What's left is there are efficiencies created by those tools, and what's left is the recruiters, our sourcers, our leaders in the regions need to have more value-added conversations, less of order taking and more of this is what you can expect, more advisory. And we kind of have a North Star on the operations team where we're talking about an experience, and it may vary depending on what we're talking about. Is it the candidate's experience? Is it the recruiter's experience? The hiring manager's experience? But somebody's experience is always considered, and in many instances, multiple experiences, right? It's the candidate and the hiring manager, the recruiter and the candidate, whatever the case may be, is how is what we're going to do going to impact that? And then if it's impacted, how do we mitigate it being a negative interaction, a negative experience? And if you, for a long time, I don't know that we had a clear vision of candidate experience should be. Look, at the end of the day, I think the days of we want to collect all that stuff on the front end from a candidate because we know we need it and we're just going to ask it all at once, I think those days are gone, because you should be collecting content or information when it's needed. Because if you don't, you're creating a very friction-filled experience. And so we also have to then adapt to say, we're not going to get that information. Doesn't mean that we don't need it. Just means we don't need it then. We may need to figure out where to collect information. And so that's a microcosm of how we approach anything that we're doing from an operational standpoint, is what is the experience going to be like? How are we going to measure it? And then what decisions can we make coming out of it? What changes can we implement, or what does the future of this particular process look like? We've learned that over time. We've learned that over not necessarily doing it that way. And I think that's such an important dynamic, is continuing to evolve, whether it would be with the tools that are available to you. There's always a learning in what you're doing. And it may be a very frustrating experience designing and launching and implementing some tool. What was the lesson? What are we going to take with us next so that when we do this similarly somewhere else? And I think the biggest lesson that we've learned is, let's start simple. We don't have to get overly complicated right off the bat, because then what you end up having is a very complex process that people have to understand and then execute. And what you leave is an opportunity for them to get it wrong. And then essentially you're now correcting it, which means you've done two changes rather than one effective change. And starting simple and always getting more complicated and complex should be our methodology. And that's how we operate.
No, I think that's great. Thanks for sharing that level of detail. Yeah, I always say that simple is powerful, right? And complexity creates noise. And as you start looking at it, I think you talked about a lot of things there that really resonated with me and hopefully do with the audience as well. As you started looking at what are the transactions we're doing today? Where can technology help automate a lot of those things and then free up our team for more kind of higher value types of activities? I think it's really important for organizations to look at technology that way first to lay a strong foundation to build that strategic value off of. All too often, folks get caught up in the, what are all these shiny objects around? Like, what is the latest and greatest utilization of AI? And they try to put all these new tools in place that are forcing their recruiters or other resources on their team to learn, to get adoption, to figure that out, when they're still doing all of these transactions. It never works. They don't have the time to be able to extract the value from those solutions. So the way in which you and your team thought about this and deployed this technology to take and automate those transactions is very smart and has a strong foundation to build off of. So kudos to you and your team for doing that. I love the way that you did that. Yeah.
Just to add on to it, by no means have we gotten it figured out. I think one of our biggest tasks post-implementation of anything is measuring utilization, driving effectiveness of the change. And that's always going to be it's not a challenge. It is a challenge, but it's not surprising. I think, you know, more so now than probably, and maybe it's just hypersensitive at the moment, given what's taking place in the technology evolution that we're seeing, is you can come up with a change management plan on how you're going to develop something, and then you're going to implement it, and then you're going to measure it. And it means nothing if you don't have an organization that's ready for change. And so what we have tried to do, and we're still very much on this journey of creating that change mindset, is getting our teams to understand that this is, yes, a change, and yes, it's probably going to be a different process for you. And maybe there's some different level of comfort, and as you use it, you'll get more and more comfortable. But this isn't the only change that's going to happen, right? We have to continue to embrace the idea that what it looks like today certainly is different than what it looked like yesterday, and it'll be different tomorrow. And so if there's this constant idea that I'm ready for whatever's next and I will embrace it, it doesn't mean that I have to love every detail of it or that it's going to be entirely... I think there's a misnomer on AI and automation where it's like, if I still have to push a button, isn't that manual? Yeah, but is it manual? Like, it's there are triggers, but there are things that you have to trigger. And is it more effective than what we were doing? Maybe. If it's not, let's talk about it and figure out, like, are you following the right process? I'm genuinely passionate about people who are curious when they come with hey, I need some help with something. And a lot of times it's, this process is broken. And if you start with that, process is broken, that's a perception. That's not a perspective. Like, if you're coming with hey, was this how it was supposed to work? Or is this, how did you guys figure this into the equation when you made that decision? And I don't take that as questioning decisions. I take that as I'm trying to understand so I can see the big picture in it all. And so we're trying to infuse that mindset across the board to people that changes are going to happen. You may not love all of them, but there's a bigger picture in mind. And just because it doesn't work the way you would want it, again, talking about those global complexities, doing one thing for one region may break it for another region. And so we have to do it lowest common denominator before we get customized. And that happens after the simple start, right? Like, you can get more complex after the fact. But when you start early, it's like, you got to test it there. And this didn't work there, but it did work here. It gets complicated. And so we're very much on that change curve to embrace it. And I don't want anybody to think that we had it figured out, or we don't, because we're still evolving ourselves. And I think that's what's important to understand, is everybody's ready for change at different speeds.
Yeah, absolutely. The change curve and the level of effort it takes to navigate the change in a technology-enabled delivery model in TA is significant and often underestimated. And the approach that you're taking is the right one, is that I love how you said, I'm ready for what's next. Is getting it culturally embedded that the organization is going to continually push for change and learn and grow and adapt, but do it in a collaborative fashion where everything might not be perfect or right the first time, but organizationally, you're going to work on that going forward in a collaborative way in order to continue to evolve the organization. You've mentioned it a couple times that in your role and with your team, you look at like measurement and measuring the effectiveness of not only the tools, but of the overall delivery model. Talk about that a little more, like maybe start with like, how does your organization measure performance in TA, or what does good look like? Or what do those great experiences that you're trying to use as your North Star, like how do you measure for those? And then how do you use those measurements then to navigate what change comes next?
Yeah, time to hire, time to fill is one of the main metrics, but I think that is a leading indicator. What you can ultimately derive from time to fill, especially if it's too high, is one of the key areas is that we look at is time and stage, which kind of fragments our process into how long a candidate stays in each of the stages of our end-to-end. Some of them sit with TA, some of them sit with a hiring manager our TA is responsible for. And so if time to fill is too high, we can literally dissect it and say we're spending a little bit too long in interview, or it's taking too long for us to post the job, whatever the case may be. And so that helps us drive speed. Because I think the name of the game in any talent acquisition function is we're doing it fast. Like you have a need. Now, the other dynamic is, are we proactive enough, right? Do we have pipelines? And so we actually have a metric that we can see how long to the first candidate. And if that number is low, it's either that we're proactively pipelining or we just happen to get a lot of good volume right off the bat. We also look at conversion rates, right? Are we screening the right people? Is that person moving to the hiring manager? Is that hiring manager moving offer? And we have a daily dashboard that actually can take our current funnel of candidates and then using historical conversion rates, project how many hires we theoretically could get from our current funnel. And so when we meet with the business, we can tell them, hey, it's not an attraction problem at the moment, if that's what the case may be. We have enough in our funnel to ultimately fill the positions. Now, if we were to increase the conversion rate, we'd see X number come through. If we were to decrease the time spent in this stage, we would see time to fill fall to this. And so we really can use these tools to help influence the business decisions that need to be made. And then oftentimes we have used data to stand up project teams that help us unclog a specific section within our process. The other dynamic around candidate experience is we do send out a survey for candidates. It's fine and it gives us some insights. I think what I'm more focused on is understanding how candidates engage with us. And a lot of the tools that we have, whether it be our careers page that gives us Google Analytics, where people are coming from and demographic information and things like that, where they allow it, or when they're engaging with Emma, who is our recruiting agent, on our careers page, what questions they're asking about Johnson Controls, what questions do they ask that we don't have the answers to, which countries are engaging most. And so what that does for us, it allows us to make decisions on how we want to market, how we want to reach that audience. And so one of the learnings that we had before we went live with our chatbot through Paradox is there was this anecdotal perception that candidates in our manufacturing plants don't engage with technology, that they just want to drop off a resume. And that may be the case for some, but we didn't really have any data that would support that. And so when we went live with it, and over, I would say, a couple of months, we looked at some data, and the job that is most engaged with on our careers page, where people are asking, in the United States at least, is our manufacturing job, an assembler in our plant. So clearly that job is so we can now market to them through text message. We can send them QR codes. We can put flyers at the front desk when people want to drop off a resume and say, hey, or apply. And so we're now meeting the candidate where they are. On the other side of it is in India, that's the country where we have the most engagement with any sort of AI technology. And that's not at the assembler level, that's at an engineering level. And so we're talking about some really high level experience. And we, like I said, we cater to the audience. And so if that audience is maybe more apt to engage with a generative AI or chatbot, then let's meet them where they are. Let's send them content in that way and put it in front of them. And so really from a candidate experience standpoint, AppCast has been a great partner to give us full funnel metrics on conversion rates and quality and how candidates engage with us in the in lead generation forms versus an application. And so giving us a real, you know, depth of available options to get to the candidates that we're looking for. And so candidate experience, and like I said, we use the data, we use the insights to make the future decisions. And so if I recently did this, there's it went end to end on our process. And I look to see where do we have automation? Where do we have AI? And then where do we don't? Where don't we have it? And that's what the next decision is. All right, we've got it here and it's getting us something. So let's focus on here to get us something here while we continue to stabilize and tweak here and there. It's never a finished product. So that's why if you start simple and you constantly tweak here and there, you get better and better rather than all the complexities of something being broken. But candidate experience and data, that is, it's not unique to TA. Candidate experience might be, but like data, telling stories, narratives, there's never been more data available to people. And so let's start with that and then have a discussion. We can have our own perspectives, but you got to be rooted in some sort of unbiased source of truth and go from there. And I would say we've had a ton of experiences where the data told us something that we did not expect. And now we've got the business standing up, like I said, project teams to help us in ways that in the past, it was just like, that's your problem. That's not our problem. So about shared responsibility, this is all of our problem. So if we can't, let's just say hiring managers are sitting on resumes for too long. That is not just a TA problem. That is a business problem. And so we can solve it together. Or you can ask us to try to influence people. We're going to get better results with a collaborative approach.
Yep. No, that's great. I love, and we've had these conversations in the past, you and I have, but I love the way that you're thinking about this. And this shows up and resonates with me with so many of the clients that we work with as we start helping people dig into their data, their process. What is the information? Like, what story is your data telling you? And all too often, we find the thing that their biggest enemy is the personal assumptions that they have made, essentially, of like your example of manufacturing people will never interact with a text-based, mobile-enabled chatbot. That couldn't be further from the truth. And we've had that play out with Paradox and other solutions at multiple clients and then help them design that in a way where they get results they didn't think were possible because they had their own limiting beliefs on what they thought was real and not. And so you have to dive into what is your data? What is your process? And your focus from operations on how you're doing it of, okay, let me really think about eliminating waste and unnecessary friction. And that is how we're going to be really diligent to improve these experiences for all the stakeholders. I love that we do that with our clients and it's so valuable for people. So that's really great.
One of the things that I would say is also, there is definitely a population in that example that doesn't engage with technology. And so we still have to share demo too. And one of the things that we did in that particular example was if, again, anecdotal feedback is they don't even have email addresses. That's broad. Like if you have a phone, you have an email address. You may not know it, but you have an email address.
Right.
And so what we did is we actually put in the application process for that particular population. If you don't have an email address, here's a hyperlink to Gmail or any of the to create an email account. Here are the steps that you can use. We need your contact information. This is why it's used. And so we're meeting them where they are. If they're not able to put in or remember an email address, we'll help you get there. And then you can still apply too. And both things can be true. Whereas you have people that don't engage in the same ways, but you can't discount one at the detriment of the other. And we're trying to serve multiple audiences here. And that's, and I keep pulling it back to candidate experience. That's why it's so important is understanding how they engage with us does allow for localization or customization in ways that if you start with a preconceived assumption of what, you know, the limiting factor is, then you're siphoning off one group and you're not attracting the one that you may actually be wanting to target. And so it can be both things at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is no perfect solution, right? And so you have to go in and you have to look at it from what is the greatest opportunity for value here and then prioritize those and do work in a very deliberate way along the greatest opportunities. And then as you work down that list and correct things, let's do the analysis on each of these things absent our initial like emotional thoughts or biases going in. Let's let the data and the analysis tell us what the real problem is that we need to solve. Yeah, I think that's great. So that's a lot of information that you provided here on where you come from, some of the things that you've done, where you're at Johnson Controls. I love what you're doing there. What's next? What do you see in the next 12 months or so? What kind of initiatives are boiling up now that you're looking at and working on?
So for us, it blends into the future of the function, not only here at Johnson Controls, but I think what TA is looking in. We're taking more of an approach to internal mobility, onboarding, blurring the lines between talent acquisition and what it's like to be an employee, right? At some point, there is no handoff. It's a continuous experience. And we're looking at different tools and technology to evaluate internal mobility in a much more deliberative way. Right now, we do a ton of internal hiring, but I don't know that it's in a strategic effort, so to speak. We're waiting for that person to happen to see the job internally. We're not doing a ton of marketing internally for our own employees. And that's very valuable at this point, is we need to show not only career development internally, but that, you know, for people who aren't actively looking, they still should have options too, right?
Yep.
And so internal mobility is a big focus for us. And then just improving the onboarding experience, all the while continuing to evolve process and tools and technology within the function. And we're also on this, I would say, a transition into a new model where we are moving away from transactional recruiting and more to a consultant advisory approach. And so those things go all hand in hand, because if we're adding the expectation around capabilities for internal mobility and even onboarding and really asking potentially more of our recruiters, they have to have time to be able to do that.
Right.
And so adding automation and technology to take away some of the low value tasks, that's why it's so important for them to embrace it, because then this leaves them open to be able to do things that they were not doing before and that are really valuable to the organization. And so that's the journey that we're on, is how do we get to be more strategic, viewed as that value-added partner, an HR business partner in the same way talent acquisition business partner, have that mindset where, you know, not everybody can recruit. Recruiting is a skill set. And yeah, I think it gets discounted at times because managers interviewed a bunch of people over their career. No manager is ever going to interview as many candidates as a recruiter interviews. Probably a recruiter interviewing more candidates in 1 year than a manager will ever interview in their career.
Yep.
So we really need to own that and be those subject matter experts. And so that is our journey, is we are trying to be, instead of just talent acquisition, be full talent at Johnson Controls, which I think you'll see in other companies and other parts of the talent space.
Yeah, that's the evolution of the talent space for sure. And that's where the most strategic value lies. And you can only get there through leveraging the power of technology that continues to advance and creates that scale and space for people to add that strategic value, where they're not chasing transactions all day. So Yeah, I think that's great. Last question I would have for you is, what's some advice that you would provide for others in the space? Their listening audience is either in TA currently or interested in TA as a profession. And so what's some advice that you might provide for them?
I think that this advice goes for anybody, honestly. It's, you got to be curious and you have to always be willing to learn and develop yourself. There's so many different resources available today that are free, that are to acquire information in many different ways. And I think we do ourselves a disservice if we focus on the end result being, this is what I want, whether it's a pay increase or a title. You have to focus on what you need to do to get there. And 9 times out of 10, that's develop yourself in some form or fashion, learn something that's going to push you towards or to closer to what you're trying to get to. And so instead of chasing the money and the titles or the next role, chase the knowledge. And everything else should follow. And I think what I've realized in my career for myself is I never really thought of, oh, I want that next job. It was just like, how can I get better at this job and continue to add value in different ways? And I hope I've done that. I'd like to think I've had a nice progression, but nothing is a finished product. And for me, having been at Johnson Controls and then in the staffing, third-party staffing for a while, I don't have a lot of experience in terms of seeing what it looks like somewhere else. And so I have to force myself to learn and ask questions and seek out information from peers in the industry or articles or listening to podcasts, because if I only did things based on what I saw in front of me, then it would be very limiting because my experience has been in, for the most part, one company. And so I've really tried to develop myself and be curious about what are they doing and how did that work and how did you know it worked and those sorts of things. And again, that's not unique to talent acquisition. That's just career development. If anybody is waiting for somebody else to develop them, they're probably going to be waiting a long time. And you can control your destiny. My journey at Johnson Controls and previously Tyco, the roles that I moved into didn't exist before I moved into them in many ways, because we were on that growth curve too. But I made myself ready for when those roles were available and right place, right time. And so just be curious, always be willing to learn, educate yourself, ask questions. And I think the most important dynamic would be is you can keep a perception that you may have, but you have to be open to different perspectives, because other perspectives lead you to understand decisions and strategy in different ways. If you only do it through your own perception, hey, this process is bad. Maybe that's how you feel. And I'm not going to change your mind if you think it's bad. But if you knew the three other perspectives that went into why that process is that way, would it change your perception? Maybe. But you have to be open to hearing, you know, what and educating yourself on, hey, it's not just my view of the world. There's a lot of views of the world. And so that's how decisions get made. And if you're curious and you're inquisitive and you want to learn, the road is long ahead of you.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. I think it's one of those things that you normally find in individuals, those that are intellectually curious and have a mindset of being a lifelong learner and being open to and just committed and in some cases obsessive about learning as much as they can and taking in different perspectives. That old adage comes true is that, what is it? Opportunity favors the prepared. And that you find out that there are opportunities that exist in the world that you never dreamt of when you are intellectually curious and exploring things and taking and going outside of what traditional folks do as far as educating yourself. So I think that is absolutely great advice. Mike, you did an excellent job. Thank you for sharing today on the podcast and with the audience. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you having me and happy to chat anytime.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. If something we said today resonated with you, please subscribe, rate, and download our podcast and share the episode with your network. Ready to transform your recruiting practices with leading edge technology, just like our other clients at 3M, Comcast, Stryker, and Walgreens? Then reach out at sagemarkhr.com for a free consultation.